Hey, welcome to Driven by Design, the only show that shows you the future of automotive design. With our driven designer, Brian Thompson. Hey, Brian.
Hello. Proud to be here.
Welcome to the first show of a show I've wanted to put on for years since we started the station. I just grew up in the car business. My dad was an executive for Chrysler Corporation, and we were car crazy as kids. And then where do I move? To California, which is even more car crazy here. So I've thought this is a conversation long overdue, and I welcome you to OC Talk Radio.
As I said, I am proud to be here. This is a passion. And I think we're going to discover a lot of really cool things with this show.
Well, you know, cars reflect who we are, who we think we are. And so I want to see where we're going, because you guys live in the future of this all the time here.
Yeah.
Tell us your background. Who is Brian Thompson?
Well, I'm a redneck from Arabic, Arizona, and I design cars. I've been about...
Just pickup trucks, though, right?
I like pickup trucks the best. Although I tend to drive tiny little things like Fiats. I don't know why.
We'll talk about that someday, yeah.
Put the pen to paper, a big truck comes out. Yeah, I've been in the car industry for about 2 decades. God, that sounds so long to me now. But yeah, started out in France, working at Citroën, and then...
You did? Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to talk about that someday. That's cool.
Spent a good decade at Nissan, working in-house, was part of the restructuring of Nissan back in 99.
And that was here somewhere.
Yeah, Southern California, San Diego, and really had an amazing experience and sort of sowed my oats and sort of grew my wings, if you will, for entrepreneurship. And after a decade, I started my own consultancy.
Well, let's get your big gets out on the table here. What did you get to do when you were at Nissan? I thought you had a hand in some rather well-known vehicles.
Oh, there. You know, it was such a fun experience. I did the first Titan interior right out of school. And it was like...
That's the truck, right? That's the pickup truck?
Yeah, and the Armada. Same interior. But just was such a cool thing because I was a kid and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And then I won this, you know, I sketched this theme that won. And it was like, you just had to jump in and do it. And that was like, trial by fire. It was amazing. And then, a bunch of show cars that nobody will remember, you know, obviously various, you know, luxury cars. But the thing I was most proud of, the last thing I did before I left Nissan was the NV 2500 cargo van, which is, you know, still current vehicle. And it's like, it just makes me so happy.
You're proudest of is a cargo van?
Yeah. People always say that. And it's like, I've even had like clients be like, are you really proud of that? I'm like, yeah. I love the everyman vehicles. I love seeing vehicles that are customized, that people make their own, that they get them dirty and beaten up like an old pair of jeans, you know? And I really tried to make that vehicle have not only a great stance, but also be something that people would connect with and want to make their own. And, you know, and I always like to say, like, I have friends who did cars like, you know, Ford GT and, you know, these supercars, but yeah. I get to see mine every day.
That's true.
It makes me happy. So,
so is this show that we've put together here, Driven by Design, is this just inside baseball? Is just those for who are driven by design, or is this got an everyman aspect? Is there something everybody can learn from this show?
I think the philosophy of what I love about design being for everybody is I hope the show really does appeal to different types of audiences. It's really a show about inspiration and connection. So you can find inspiration anywhere, and we're going to explore that. So we're going to tie it to the car industry, but we're going to have visiting guests from all sorts of different industries that have some connection to the car
industry. You've even worked with what I think is another iconic thing, sort of like in the car business, I guess it's on the periphery of it, Airstreams.
Yes, yeah. I've had a relationship with Airstream since about 2003. I wrote them a fan letter.
That sounds weird when you say that. I've had a relationship with them here.
Well, you know, it's like, you know what? They're like family. It is. I wrote them a fan letter, almost 20 years ago. And that letter sat for 3 years until somebody else found it, Bob Wheeler, the new president.
Somebody found your fan letter?
Yeah. It was written to the president was the president at the time. He just stuck it in his desk. And when he retired...
Somebody's cleaning out the desk. And what's this?
Yeah. Bob Wheeler, who became the president, found it. Bob Wheeler and Dickie Regal together, they found it and they called me. And they said, what's this letter I'd written? I said, I want to do like a collaboration with you. And that begat a relationship that it still continues to this day.
And what an incredible story. We'll have to talk more about that one. It's like writing a fan letter to Steven Spielberg and having the next person in the chair find it instead. Yeah.
Yeah. Writing it for Goonies and finding out that it's like you find it with a Stranger Things.
Suddenly Tarantino's calling.
Tarantino,
you.
Yeah.
All right, so what was your inspiration? What was your connection to the car business? You grew up in Arizona. I don't picture Arizona as a car culture.
Yeah, I'm from a little town called Prescott, Arizona, and we do say Arabic, God, Arizona, which just means, you know, it is of the people. No, I'm really proud
for
of my
the
roots.
People. Yeah,
yeah. I'm proud of my roots in Arizona, and I love growing up there. You know, we always had like 70s Japanese cars, and I really love those. Like, you know, the hot the vinyl seats that burn the back of your
is
legs.
Is this like a Datsun?
Yeah, uh-huh, Datsun. Right? We had a Subaru. You know, all those little teeny little cars, and I just loved the benign charm of those cars, and more so
we used to call those clown cars in Detroit.
Yeah, because you can get all your friends in them.
Yeah, that's true. I had a lot of clown friends. Yeah,
I always used to draw these little pods when I was a kid that didn't look like cars, but oddly, and these pods would be like people facing each other.
Did you watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers? Were you pod people?
Here? Kind of like that. But let's imagine with like four people to a pod. And I don't know why. I just love the idea of the way people connected in a space as a little kid. And so, you know, oddly, that's what cars are turning into this day. They're these little transport devices where people face each other.
So you're sitting in Prescott, and you decide you're going to be a designer. Did you go to design school? Was this by accident, or was this by design?
You know, back then, you know, there wasn't internet, right? So you have to put yourself in that time frame.
Right.
I was so driven, so enthusiastic, and I had no resources. I didn't even know how you became a car designer. Long story short, I was at Arizona State studying architecture, told my guidance counselor I wanted to be a car designer, and he said to me, you know, son, that's a pipe dream. All you kids want that. And I was so upset by what he said that I dropped out of college that month, and I moved to France with no money. I didn't speak French.
Why France?
I was really obsessed with French cars. Okay. And French guys. So I went there just to see like if I could find
they
love
go hand
in,
hand, probably. I mean, yeah,
yes,
right.
And I moved there, and I met a guy in a bar. He let me live in a trailer, and I lived in a camper for a year, and I went to every car studio in Europe on, you know, like the Eurail Pass, or I just
What, do you just knock on the door and say, I'm here?
I did exactly that, and nobody would see me, of course.
Big,
I was like a skinny, dirty kid weighing, you know, $110, until I ended up at Fiat. I went to Torino, Italy, and slept on a park bench. And in the morning, I went to the Fiat headquarters, and I just refused to leave until somebody would see me.
Oh,
and,
my goodness, what an incredible! This is literally like the stories we hear about getting into Hollywood.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a car industry. Has
and to me, it had that same glamour and feel to it growing up as a kid. Yeah. Maybe it still does.
Yeah, this wasn't as glamorous. It was very, Turin at the time was very industrial, and the park bench, I can tell you, was not glamorous. But the long story short, I guess it is a long story.
So who came out and saw you?
Peter Davis was the design director at the time. I don't know why. I guess he saw something in me, and he spent the day with me. He cleared his schedule.
Did you have a portfolio,
yes,
or did you?
I did. I had this little portfolio of all my little cars, and I remember he said to me these words. He said, "You are green, but you have the it that makes a car designer different from a product designer."
Wow.
And I will never forget those words. And so he basically told me where to go to college, how to make a proper portfolio. He said, don't put any cars in it. They're going to teach you how to draw cars, draw people, draw naked people, because cars are based on proportions and people are proportions. So I did everything he said. I just did what he said. And it was funny, like, you know, 15 years later, I met him at a party, and I went up to him and I was like, you don't probably remember me, but you changed my life.
Literally.
Yeah, and he did remember me, and we're good friends today. So,
what a story.
Yeah.
Okay, talk about driven to be in this business here, sleeping on a park bench until they drive you away. All right, so where did you go to school?
I started at Art Center in Switzerland, but it closed as soon as I got there. So then I was like crazy.
Is there a connection between the two?
Who knows, right? But so I got to have the great culture shock of moving from Lausanne, Switzerland to Detroit, Michigan.
Mm.
And
I'm from,
I spent 4 years at College for Creative Studies in Detroit, Michigan. I
never even heard of that. Is that downtown somewhere?
Mm-hmm. It's right across from the DIA. It's right downtown.
Yeah, the Detroit Institute of Art, for those who don't know. Yeah.
Detroit Institute of Art. It's right. And when people say they live in Detroit, they typically don't live in Detroit. Like, we lived in the proper Detroit, and, you know, with the houses that they burned down on Halloween, et cetera. And it was an amazing experience. It was like, be a student in a world of anarchy. You know, like, it was just craziness there. And I had such a blast. I really loved my experience at school.
You like this anarchy, this chaos, this industrial rust.
I did, but I also have this sort of, you know, I don't know, side of me that's like, nice things aren't nice. So, like, after school, I was like, I'm moving to San Diego. Yeah. And that's where I got.
Enough of this.
Yeah, I went to, and that's when I started at Nissan right out of college. And another, you know, same thing. I wrote Nissan a fan letter. And said I wanted to do a Datsun for my senior thesis. And
so fan letters seem to be part of your success formula here, whether it's a fan letter to Nissan or a fan letter to Airstream or just standing outside saying, let me in.
Yeah, I think that's the spirit there. That's been the spirit of my whole career. Please let me in.
Please let me in. All right. So when you got in, what'd you see?
Oh, like, gosh.
Was it what you thought you'd see? Was it exciting and glamorous and fun? Or was it boring and industrial and they're putting you in a little niche and you're going to design this little bolt? You're going to design the steering column on something and you're like, what?
Yeah. My experience the minute I started my career was, first of all, my mentor, Alfonso Albaiza, he when I was interviewing, he came over, took off my tie, and sat in my lap. And that's when I knew, like, I'm entering something totally unlike what I expected. And I got hired. And the first thing I did, they you know, I didn't know what I was going to get into. When I joined that, I remember there were people from Chrysler or, you know, some of the Americans that told me I was joining a sinking ship because Nissan was going bankrupt at the time.
Yeah.
But I had this feeling that...
What year was this roughly?
1999, when Renault purchased Nissan. And I just felt, because I had been in France during my internships, there was a French sensibility to design that's really good, but they don't maybe make the best cars in terms of quality,
right,
but the Japanese do.
Right.
And so I thought, you put French design sensibility with Japanese quality, and like, it's a sure bet. And I went in there, and it was like that thing you just said about being put into a niche and having designed a door handle. It was such a wonderful thing because I got to start from scratch. The first thing that we did was establish the brand values of what the new company was going to be. And as a student,
Nissan Renault?
Yeah, like, what was Nissan going to be? You know, things like for the truck I was working on, you know, there were words like, you know, words like massive precision and, like, you know, muscular planers. You know, these words that were just...
Does that come first? Did they sit and decide what the adjectives are and then try and design towards them, or did they just turn you loose and say, what do you got?
So what I didn't know at the time was I was learning the skills that were going to serve me for the rest of my career as a design consultant, because what I learned was that before you set pen to paper, you have to understand the philosophy of who and what you're designing for.
Yeah.
So if you just sit down and start drawing, you can draw anything, but it might be totally irrelevant. And so the first things I learned to do was to establish the brand values, the feeling. What are the priorities of this brand or this product?
How do you do that?
So I think in something like a case like that, it was, how do we take what is great about this company and connect it to people in a way that has been failing to do so? And so we, you know, I learned to establish a form vocabulary that was modern but approachable, was not friendly but confident, words that meant that when people saw it, they were attracted to it, they weren't put off by it. And so I've used that in my career ever since, of like, it's all about connecting to the people who are going to be inspired and have an emotional reaction to this product more than...
Because you want them to have more so than any other product I can think of, you want people to respond emotionally. My daughter just went out looking for cars. And she got one, and it wasn't the one I thought she was going to get, because somehow it wasn't because the salesman, you know, you love the salesman, I know that's part of it, and they're good to you, and they're good price. She had an emotional connection to a vehicle that I'd never seen or have before.
Yeah, vehicles are always emotional purchases, despite what anyone will tell you. Some people will...
And her husband didn't see it, and I'm not sure I saw it. And to be clear, my daughter has a five-year-old, and she's pregnant with our second grandchild, thank you.
Congratulations.
And suddenly she's at that age where she wants what her husband can't see and what old gramps can't see. She wants a mom mobile.
Yeah, so there's
she wants something she can picture her kids in and the side. I could see her. She got a big, basically she got a, what's the, Touareg by Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of has this massive square feel to it, which is not at all what I thought she'd go for. But she likes it because I'm sure it felt safe. I'm sure it felt you know, secure, and I'm sure it felt she could picture all the stuff she's going to stick in there, the soccer bags and all the other stuff.
It spoke to her on a primal level. So
yeah,
you know, if you
really
think about it, there the car industry right now, there isn't a bad car in this American market. The standards of for you know are so high.
So just go out and find the good, the reliable.
I always say, buy the car that makes you smile.
Yeah,
from the inside, and like because they're in what's happening there is that it's meeting all the things that we call practical. You know, the mileage. I can put my kids in it, put my stuff in it.
Yeah, and but I can afford it, and all the other things.
I can afford it, but there's this underlying current that a lot of people sometimes don't even realize they're being affected by: the forms, the shapes, the colors, the things that are the way the car smells can affect how your reaction to it and your connection to it. There's great stories we can tell in this podcast about.
I know your next guest, when we're gonna do two shows here today, their next guest has a marketing background as well as a design background. She'll get a smile out of this. When it was all said and done and she sealed the deal, they did what I've never seen a dealer do before, and they brought out a big red bow.
Oh, yeah.
And they put it on the car, and she immediately started posting it all over her social media. And I thought, well, that's the simplest trick I've ever seen in my life. Oh, my goodness. It sealed the deal. It was a present to her.
It was a present to herself. Yeah, for sure. You know, I think that's on the highest level, that's what you know, of course you want cars to be successful, but you're a human designing for a human. So you want to make something that makes people happy. One of my mentors, Tom Matano, who created the Mazda Miata, always said, if you're going to be a part of creating the future, why not create a happy future instead of a post-apocalyptic future?
Oh, wow.
And so I always thought...
I'm an old Star Trek kid, so we're going to have a positive look at the future here, not the negative doom and gloom.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and you also, you know, I think what a designer does is it's not curing cancer and it's not saving lives, but it is providing the service that's a really cool thing. We can affect the world that we live in. We can.
So let me ask you the question that everybody's thinking right now.
Yeah.
We're talking about a day and an era when cars meant something, when we felt a connection to them. Now they are all the XY264 with 8.6 liters of this or something. Do we, and we're thinking of them as self-propelled buses, automated vehicles. Are we losing that? Have we stopped anthropomorphizing?
Yeah,
where you turn it into something. It's Betsy. It's something you feel an attachment to. Are we losing that? Is it becoming just an appliance?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So, if you think if you really think about what the concept of a car is, right? That concept is in transition right now.
Yeah.
So if it in the 50s and 60s, if it was really, you know, the new cars every year, it's a status symbol. You know, it's a suit you put on.
Right.
And as it's transitioning, what's becoming more meaningful to people is the freedom of mobility. So while there always will be this connection, I believe, to driving. Driving is a cathartic experience. It's something that gives people pleasure. But there's also commuting, which is not so pleasurable.
No.
And it's if you can think about the meaning and the emotional connection to being able to have mobility, it means that the connection is there, but it's not the same as it was when you drove the car. So think about, you know, right now when you're rite of passage as you're 16, you get your driver's license.
Yeah.
But what if you have that mobility all your life? What if you have that mobility after you can't drive anymore?
Yeah.
So there's a meaningfulness.
Why is everybody
there
looking at me in the room here? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. As I get older, I worry about that. I had to take my dad's car keys away many years ago and wasn't too happy. My car executive couldn't drive anymore here.
Yeah. So I think that there's, you know, meaning shifts, but and also personalization shifts. You know, the cars, I it's not too far out to imagine a smart skins car that can change colors and content.
All right, now you got me. So we're going to not just talk about the deep, dark undertones of the American psyche here. We might actually get into some fun and to some freedom and into some other fantasies that we haven't. There's one I never thought of. The car would adapt to you.
Right.
It's like a mood ring.
Wait till we get into the bench seat and all the things you can do in a bench seat that you can't do in a bucket seat anymore.
Well, all right. I don't know. We're going to keep this PG, so I don't know.
PG-13.
So, where are we going to hear this? This is Driven by Design. How do people get in touch with you if they do want to find out more about what you do? You're now an independent designer, is
correct?
That
correct? Yeah, I came up with the very creative name of naming my consultancy Brian Thompson Design. So it's BrianThompsonDesign.com, and then on all social media platforms, you know, Instagram, Twitter,
and
Facebook,
spell it. How do we spell Brian? That can be a lot of ways.
My handle on those is Brian S. Thompson. So it's Bryan S. like Scott Thompson. On all social
Tom With Thompson. A P in there.
With a P, thank you.
T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N.
Yeah, I wish I had some creative name, but you know what? That's what I got. It's good enough for who it's for.
All right. Well, tune in each and every week as we find out more people like you, this crazy tribe that calls themselves Driven by Design, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.